Hello, this is Daryl Castle with today's podcast. Today is Friday, March 18th, 2016. And on today's podcast, we're going to be discussing the nuclear arms race and how the race seems to be on again in a big way. What does the race to modernize and rebuild nuclear stockpiles across the world mean for the United States today? I became interested in this story when the United States tested a Minuteman III intercontinental ballistic missile off the coast of California on February 25th of this year, after previously testing a Minuteman III earlier that same month. The tests were done in full view of the people of California, which I'm sure caused great anxiety when they saw the fire stream streak out of the Pacific toward the sky. Testing ICBMs is not uncommon, but it is uncommon to test them at night in full view of the coast of California. There must have been a message there for someone. Nuclear testing, that is, nuclear explosions, have largely ended, except in North Korea, because of the Comprehensive Nuclear Test Ban Treaty of 1996. But apparently, testing of the delivery vehicles goes on unabated. The United States and Russia restrain themselves by the START, or Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty, and Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty. They restrain the testing of nuclear weapons, but the testing of launch vehicles continues unabated. The United States and Russia justify the testing by saying it helps modernize their arsenals and determines whether new weapons can actually reach their intended targets. The point is that the United States is not the only one testing. Russia has announced that it is determined to maintain its nuclear deterrence against the United States, and to that end, its Navy plans to test 16 submarine-launched ballistic missiles in a single test salvo from a nuclear submarine in the Barents Sea. The source is the Russian newspaper Izvestia, which did not give a date except to say that the launch would be soon. Everybody's testing, but why? Even countries like North Korea and Iran have recently tested. North Korea has apparently tested both the actual weapon and separately tested its delivery system, and reportedly is very close to being able to miniaturize warheads, which would make development of a delivery missile capable of reaching the United States much more likely. Iran has tested two ballistic missiles recently, in clear violation of its agreement with the United States, but the agreement will apparently hold since the U.S. has chosen to ignore the test. Since the fall of the Soviet Union, the Russian military was allowed to deteriorate to the point that it could no longer be relied on as an assurance for Russia against NATO and even against China. As a result, Russia's nuclear arsenal is now its top priority, according to U.S. military sources. The United States, as has been widely reported, is in the middle of a $350 billion nuclear modernization program, and at the same time, it is separately investing heavily in anti-ballistic missile technology. The widely reported part probably, most likely, says to Russia, the nuclear balance is over, and your country is losing. Since the days of the Cold War, Russia has expressed the fear that if the United States ever reached a point where it felt it could survive a first strike response, it would launch its nuclear weapons. The new, ever more precise nuclear arsenal being built, coupled with anti-missile defense technology, might accomplish that for the Russians. The Russians fear so their empty pocketbooks prevent them from trying to keep up, but they are testing, still testing. So Russia modernizes in response and tells the world that they are doing it. They have let it be known that they are revisiting the first Soviet technology of shuttling missiles along by rail. They are also working on low Earth orbit technology to widen the range of their missiles. Mr. Putin recently ordered the Russian military to begin the withdrawal from Syria. Why would he do such a thing? Why would he do that? That is the question that's on everyone's mind. Most analysts take the position that he intended to make Russia seem like a great power again, fully capable of striking abroad. Perhaps he accomplished all that But it was apparent to military experts in the U.S. military that he could not maintain that deployment for long. He did not have the logistics to support his aircraft in Syria for very long to keep them from breakdown levels of sorties. They were not numerous enough and did not have the supply lines to prevent deterioration. Perhaps his decision to pack up and go home was economic. His military budget was about $50 billion last year, and he just announced a 5% cut this year. The Syrian deployment, however, was estimated to cost only a couple of million dollars per day, which is small change for such an undertaking. He also obtained several international weapons deals to sell the new weapons he demonstrated there, so it probably wasn't economic. Why then, since his friend and host of two Russian bases, Mr. al-Assad, is far from secure and ISIS is weakened but not destroyed? He is shifting part of the responsibility to Iran and apparently intending to supply them with weapons and technology to do the job. More escalation for the Middle East, because the Saudis will have to respond to Iran's new weapon systems by finding their own somewhere. Perhaps Mr. Putin wants to be free to develop his nuclear arsenal and to concentrate on that, or perhaps he is just too smart to spend much of his blood and treasure in the Middle East. That explanation makes a lot of sense to me. He is just too smart to do that, despite the condemnation of the international community of nations, even weak countries such as North Korea and Iran, test ballistic missiles and sometimes the warheads they carry as well. Iran clearly violated the agreement it has with the United States and risked a crippling reapplication of sanctions to test two ballistic missiles recently. Developing and maintaining nuclear weapons, though these countries seem to believe, is a military necessity for them. The leaders of countries that get on the bad side of the United States end up dead sometimes in a very public way, unless, of course, they have nuclear weapons. Just look at Mr. Gaddafi in Libya, who defied the West and the whole central banker-run financialized global system with his proposed gold-based Pan-African Union. He's dead now. His country is chaos. Hussein in Iraq, Mubarak in Egypt, all the same, no nuclear weapons. Then do what the West says, i.e. the United States says, or suffer the consequences. If you have nuclear weapons, then you are at least tolerated, even if your leader is insane, a la North Korea. It helps, of course, if you have a giant nuclear-armed creditor of the United States as your protector, as does North Korea with China. If you have nuclear weapons and you appear to side with the West, even if you secretly don't side with the West, the U.S. might look the other way and let you siphon off tens of billions of dollars in aid money as it does with Pakistan. The small states have apparently come to the conclusion that the survivability of their ruling class depends on the development of nuclear weapons. The balance is changing with China, though. The United States has a strategic bomber fleet stationed on the island of Guam in the Pacific Ocean. That bomber fleet is capable of striking all over the Far East with conventional and nuclear weapons. It was widely used during the Vietnam War and has been relatively safe sitting on Guam since then. No one in the Far East has had missiles with enough accuracy and range to reach it, but now that has changed. China has short-range ballistic missiles, anti-ship ballistic missiles, and land-attack cruise missiles that could threaten the U.S. strategic fleet at Guam and take away their effectiveness as a deterrent. In addition, the North Koreans have announced that their ballistic missiles could also reach Guam with nuclear warheads. In response, the United States is in final talks with Australia to redeploy the bomber fleet from Guam to Royal Air Force Base Darwin in Australia. That would put them outside the effective range of the Chinese missiles. It would also do at least two other things. It will require the Chinese to continue to develop newer, longer-range missiles, and it will put Australia in danger of a nuclear strike. The escalation goes on and on, round and round. There seems to be no end to it. No one who has any ability to stop it seems the least bit interested in doing so. If someone could consider relieving some of the steam from the pressure cooker that is now the world, certainly our Nobel Peace Laureate president, doesn't seem interested. Finally, folks, if this all seems a lot like madness, that's because it is. There's no end in sight. At least that's the way I see it. Till next time, folks, this is Darrell Castle. Thanks for listening.